Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the volatile standoff between Russia and Ukraine, made even more unsettling by Vladimir Putin's press conference, which was so full of contradictions and fabrications that many wonder what kind of advice and information the Russian president is getting. Catherine Stoner, the Deputy Director of the Center for Democratic Development and the Rule of Law at Stanford University and author of Resisting the State, Reform and Retrenchment in Post-Soviet Russia, joins us to discuss the extent to which Putin is delusional or cynical or both. Then we look into the prospect of a new Cold War with Russia, in particular if the crisis in Ukraine goes from bad to worse, with Putin becoming more isolated and defiant. Roger Morris, who served in the United States Foreign Service and on the senior staff of the National Security Council under both Presidents Johnson and Nixon, who is completing a book on a comparative history of the United States and Soviet Russia, joins us to discuss how much the unraveling events in Ukraine could turn back the clock. Then finally, following Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's visit to the White House, we will examine the likely impact of worsening relations between the U.S. and Russia on the faltering efforts to end the murderous and destructive war in Syria. Aaron David Miller, who has been an advisor to six secretaries of state and has an article at CNN, Putin's move could be costly to U.S. and Middle East, joins us to discuss the consequences for the Middle East of both a Putin victory and a Putin defeat in Ukraine. And joining us now is Catherine Stoner, who is a senior fellow at the Institute for International Studies, deputy director at the Center for Democratic Development and the Rule of Law, as well as faculty director of the Ford Dorsey Program in International Policy Studies at Stanford University. She is the author of Resisting the State, Reform and Retrenchment in Post-Soviet Russia, and Local Heroes, the Political Economy of Russian Regional Governance. Welcome to Background Briefing, Catherine Stoner.
Having me.
And I don't know whether you saw the press conference that Vladimir Putin held with the Kremlin press pool, but it was very strange that he would say, you know, that Yanukovych is still the acting president of Ukraine, but he can't talk to Ukraine because Ukraine has no president. Ukraine needs elections, but you can't have elections because there is already a president and no elections will be valid given that there's terrorism in the streets, etc. So what did you make of it?
It was a little confused and confusing, actually, which is unusual for Putin because he's usually very secure in you know, facts. And this did seem contradictory, as you noted, in a number of ways.
So is I've heard rumors, and I've spoken to people who've had meetings with Putin in the Kremlin, and they have suggested that he is in a bit of a bubble, that he's surrounded by yes men, and he doesn't necessarily get a full picture of what's happening in the outside world because of the sycophants around him.
Yeah, so it's not just sycophants. It's also, you know, one wonders what information he's getting exactly. I mean, he referred to having seen a swastika or on someone's black armband in Kiev. So, you know, how did he see that? And from that, he extrapolated that there were, you know, fascists. That's, you know, he's. I wouldn't say he's in such a bubble that he's easily manipulated. But you know, he's a victim, I guess, of those around him to some degree, at least.
Well, he did, you know, as he's done from the beginning, suggest that this is not about the Ukrainian people rejecting a kleptocratic regime and wanting good governance, but rather that they're being manipulated by the American CIA. Mm-hmm. He talked about the American political technologists did their work well, and it isn't the first time that they've done this in the Ukraine. I get the feeling that these people in America, they're sitting around in their laboratories and doing experiments like on rats. So, I mean, how delusional do you think he is? Is he as I mentioned in the opening, is he delusional? Is he cynical? Or is he both?
I would actually say cynical because he's not. Delusional. I actually was at a relatively small meeting with him at the end of September, and I've been in small groups with him before, and he is usually, you know, completely on top of his message. And so this is actually that part about the lab rats. That's actually not too far from his regular message. What he's suggesting there is that, you know, all of that the overthrow of Yanukovych was somehow orchestrated by the United States and you know, the National Democratic Institute USAID and all of the organizations, the International Republican Institute, that he has kicked out of Russia in the last year and a half. And, you know, he thought our former ambassador, who's my colleague here at Stanford, Michael McFaul, had initially come, you know, to foment revolution when he was appointed ambassador just over 2 years ago. So that's an older storyline and one that he's been on for a while. He sees deeper machinations in Ukraine and in particular with the United States and Europe coming right up to what he thinks of as Russia's natural historical sphere of influence. And he's trying to draw a line in the snow, if you will, in Ukraine. That is, as he also said in the news conference, a brother nation.
Again, I'm speaking with Catherine Stoner, who's a senior fellow at the Institute for International Studies, deputy director of the Center for Democratic Development and the Rule of Law, as well as faculty director of the Ford Dorsey Program in International Policy Studies at Stanford University. She's the author of Resisting the State, Reform and Retrenchment in Post-Soviet Russia, and Local Heroes, The Political Economy of Russian Regional Governance. So if he's cynical, then does he believe that there are Nazis running amok in Kiev with a swastika armband? I mean, a lot of people have been repeating that. I've been getting a lot of mail saying that this is all the Nazis and the anti-Semites are all behind that. I mean, there are a couple of right-wing parties, Right Sector and Svoboda, Freedom Party. I believe they have there are some nationalists, I think four posts in the government from Svoboda, even though its leader, who's been accused of anti-Semitism, is not in the government. And I believe somebody on the National Security Council has a deputy who, Dmytro Yarosh, who's the head of the far-right paramilitary group called Right Sector. So is there any substance to these claims?
You know, not really, despite what you just said. I think if you have demonstrations with hundreds of thousands of people in them, then you get all kinds of crazies who come to the party. And so that, you know, was there that dimension in a very, very small way on the streets of Kiev and Euromaidan? Yes, but that's not what the movement was about at all, and that was not the message at all. And, you know, I think Mr. Putin is partly selling that line for a domestic audience to revive in the memories of Russian citizens in Russia, you know, the threat of the Second World War and the memories of Russians with respect to the Second World War, very, very long. They obviously lost millions and millions of people. So that's one issue. The second is, you know, he's right, trying to create this sense of an external threat, and that you know, it is up to him and to Russia to save Ukraine from this external threat. So on the one hand, it's fascistic, but on the other hand, it's also the United States getting involved somehow. There's just simply no evidence of any of this. You know, just like, you know, he's trumping up the accusation that ethnic Russians were being threatened in Crimea. Well, there's no evidence of that. The only people who've died so far in the last week and a half, are ethnic Ukrainians. Viktor Yanukovych, his security agencies, shot 70 of them.
Right, but Putin said that they were shot by right-wing provocateurs.
Well, he said they were shot by snipers. Yes, we're not clear who hired the snipers, but he's suggesting that Yanukovych didn't. Right. But at the same time, here is another contradiction in the news conference. At the same time, he's saying that Yanukovych withdrew his security too quickly from the square and ran away. And he warned him not to do that, he said, in this press conference. And so as a result, Yanukovych has lost his country.
But he's also saying that those troops without insignia that have taken over Crimea are not Russian. I mean, there was a confrontation between the Ukrainian soldiers who were unarmed and marched up to the Russians, these people without insignias who fired over their heads. There have been efforts on the part of pro-Russian thugs to stop the press and the wives and mothers of some of the besieged Ukrainian soldiers from delivering food and parcels, etc. So that's, to me, that's where the volatility is, isn't it? I mean, what's your sense of whether or not this volatile situation could be sparked by some misunderstanding or bad move?
Sure. So that is a real danger. And I think there are different, you know, the fact is there are different groups. So on the one hand, we have some political tourists or demonstrator tourists. Who have either taken it upon themselves to go from Russia into Ukraine to participate in whatever happens. On the other hand, we have some who are definitely paid by Russia to go and stir things up. On the third hand, what Mr. Putin was suggesting, and this is just not credible, that the men in green, as they're called in Ukraine, these soldiers without insignia, are somehow local militias. The only way in which they could be local militias is that they've come from the Black Sea Fleet base that Russia has there. That's how they're local. There's no doubt that they're Russian. We've had different officials tell us they're Russian, and then they're also traveling in vehicles with the black license plate of the Russian Black Sea Fleet. No doubt there. Yes, I think there is a real danger, though, that some either Russian militia or regular army from the Navy, from the Black Sea Fleet, or a Ukrainian soldier fires accidentally or on purpose. In fact, we had some firing over the heads of Ukrainian soldiers today. That could actually spark a real conflict, and I think that's really the danger, and partly perhaps why he was reminding, you know, the audience that Ukrainians are our brothers in arms, and that these soldiers will be fighting on the same side of the barricades as the Ukrainian soldiers.
But that's my understanding, is that what polling we have from inside Russia is the Russian people are not behind the idea of a war with Ukraine. They do see these people as their brothers and sisters.
Yeah, so it's interesting. There's about a 60% approval of what he's doing, which is occupying Crimea. It's not being presented to them, though, as a war with Ukraine. It's this particular illegitimate government that has kicked out Yanukovych that is threatening ethnic Russians by passing a language law that downgraded the status of the Russian language as being equal to the Ukrainian language within Ukraine. That's, you know, more of an affront, I would say, to your average Russian. And also, we're coming off the Olympics. I think we've almost all forgotten about the Olympics having just happened. Mm-hmm. And there was a real swell of nationalism. Obviously, Russia did well and won the medal count in the Olympics. The Olympics were pulled off, thankfully, without any kind of terrorist attack. And so, I think nationalist pride was on the rise anyway. And so he's got to play to a domestic audience. So while there may not be a stomach for war with Ukraine, they're thinking of it more, and it's being presented more as a war against illegitimate leaders who may be threatening poor ethnic Russian brethren.
But along with the lie that's going around the world that the Ukrainian revolution is being propagated by the CIA and by fascists and anti-Semites, this whole language law, which was after all something that Yanukovych put in and that was repealed, and then it was repealed again. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a red herring, isn't it?
It's absolutely a red herring, of course. Again, the suggestion that Yanukovych has invited in the Russian army is also absurd, right? He on Friday in his own press conference had said, I don't I certainly hope the military doesn't get involved. And then Vitaly Churkin, the UN ambassador, Russia's UN ambassador, that is, waved around a letter saying, here, look, this is why we're in Crimea. Yanukovych just signed this yesterday, Monday. So, you know, I think there are a lot of contradictions. I think there's that's actually one of the, I think, most absurd things about all of this is the Russian perspective is just so wildly different from the Europeans and the Americans in particular.
So what is happening then diplomatically? I mean, it seems to me that John Kerry showing up in Kiev, it might have been more useful had he gone to Moscow. You know, there's no point in feeding Putin's paranoia. But what are they? Is anybody talking about the 1994 Budapest Memorandum, where the U.S., Russia, Ukraine, and the UK agreed not to threaten or use force against the territorial integrity or political independence of Ukraine, and Crimea is a part of Ukraine?
Yeah. So you know, it has been mentioned, and it's been waved at the Russians. But they're looking at this as, you know, I think the example that Putin used in his press conference was Serbia and Kosovo, and how the United States was supporting Kosovars for, you know, in their press for self-determination within Serbia. And so he's pointing to that and saying, look, you know, we have ethnic Russians within Crimea, and so, you know, they have the right to have themselves, you know, have self-determination and be protected, and so we won't push it, but we will, you know, we will protect them just as you did with the Kosovars. So he's saying this is an exception to 1994 for this reason.
Well, he also said in his press conference that the U.S. Invaded Iraq and Afghanistan and misinterpreted the U.N. mandate over Libya or used it towards their own ends. And frankly, he's got a point there. I mean, it almost feels as if the Bush-Cheney administration is the gift that keeps on giving to those around the world who want to point out American hypocrisy.
Sure, although Libya was under this administration, of course, the sure. Obama administration. But that's the line that you will hear, and I've had almost shouted at me in the last couple of years from representatives of the foreign ministry that, you know, the United States has been aggressive and has not, it's, you know, we view here in the United States our intentions as benign and helpful, but the Russians have interpreted, you know, first, there we are in Serbia, bombing them over Kosovo, and I happened to be in Russia when that was happening, and watching Russian television, you know, you can kind of understand Serbo-Croatian if you speak Russian, and even friends of mine who I would have thought of as liberal-minded and you know, speak English and were very affronted by that, that the U.S. is being far too aggressive. Then we are putting in anti-ballistic missile bases in Poland and the Czech Republic. And then there we are in Libya. There we are in Iraq before that. Libya, the Russians view us as exceeding the UN mandate, which they went along with. And, you know, former president, now Prime Minister Medvedev, has been sidelined largely because of that, because it looked weak. So, you know, their perspective is that the U.S., is dancing in the end zone, if you will, after the winning the Cold War, and Russia is pushing back in what it views as its natural sphere of influence.
Well, Catherine Stoner, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Catherine Stoner, who's a senior fellow at the Institute for International Studies, deputy director at the Center for Democratic Development and the Rule of Law, as well as faculty director of the Ford Dorsey Program in International Policy Studies at Stanford University. She's the author of Resisting the State, Reform and Retrenchment in Post-Soviet Russia, and Local Heroes, the Political Economy of Russian Regional Governance. We're going to take a brief station break and be back looking into the prospects of a new Cold War with Russia.